Mahomes has the time, delivers perfectly downfield. Touchdown, Patrick Mahomes with a rope.
This one, Adams, touchdown.
This time going deep for Beckham Jr.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to RotoViz Overtime on RotoViz Radio. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. And as always, I'm joined by Sean Siegel, my co-host here on the RotoViz Overtime podcast. We're getting ready for two fun shows this week. Looking forward to it. We've got lots to discuss. We had quite a great reaction to the topic we did last week, looking at the first couple of rounds off the draft that Sean and Sam Wallace did. And I know Sam has been sharing some of those tweets of how that team is developing since that. So I know he's getting a lot of interest there as well. So we will be continuing that conversation on today's show. We have lots of other things to talk about on today's episode as well. Looking forward to the show later in the week. We'll be looking a little bit at some of Blair Andrews' recent work. So lots of stuff to cover this week on RotoViz Overtime. But Sean, the biggest topic for me this week has been time zone. The time, obviously, stateside changed a couple of weeks back. So we were working out our times to record last week, and it was a little bit intriguing. But this week was quite fascinating because we were trying to figure out which time zones we were on and how we were going to link things up. But the good thing for the listeners is at the end of all that, we've actually managed to get the timings right, and we're both here to record the podcast at the same time. So I guess we'll say that was a successful start to the show.
It always is when we're both together as opposed to recording separately. And with the UK changing times a little bit separately from when we do, and then Arizona does something strange where we basically don't change, right? We always stay the same. So technically half of the year we're always on Mountain Standard, and that shifts depending, but it's easier just to think in terms of it. Half the year we're on Mountain, half the year we're on Pacific now. And so we get to have that kind of day that is very much shifted from the East Coast folks. And we have lots of great guys on the team working out there. You, however, are working across the ocean, and that does give all kinds of benefits. The show recommendation that we do for the Thursday shows, I won't spoil that right this moment, but you can watch seasons 1 and 2 here in the US. But if you want to watch season 3, then you need to have Amazon Prime UK, which I'm still working on how to get that here, which I think is possible, but much easier if you're located in Ireland, as you are, Colm.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It is interesting. I always think, like, we do a show, you know, so many thousand miles apart, different time zones. And I know it's come up on the show a couple of times, but one of the jokes that you've said a few times to me is that we're in two different time zones, but we actually usually arrange our shows for another time zone. We usually set up the time that we'll record the show in Eastern Standard Time. So when we went away from Eastern Standard Time, we got into some difficulties of figuring out where we were going for recording, but we did get there. It is always the way that it's usually a week or 2 weeks after it changes in the US, it changes in Ireland and the UK. And it's always, there's always 1 week in the NFL season where those games kick off a little bit earlier for us, which is always good because they end 1 hour earlier, but it only happens really 1 or 2 weeks of the season. But anyone listening in the UK or Ireland will know what I mean. It's a bit of a nice early start to those games. But today's show, Sean, we're gonna talk a lot of stuff. And I mentioned about those weeks of the season. Since we last talked, it's looking like we're getting 17 games this upcoming season. I think it's too early for us to really give a full breakdown into how that's going to affect fantasy seasons, I guess. But it's going to be interesting to see how it does progress here with the 17-game season. And I guess the other big thing to take away from that is Chiefs get the Packers. So we didn't get our Super Bowl this year, Sean, where we got to face off. But at some point this season, we will get the Chiefs-Packers to talk about.
And that should be a fun shootout between the two best quarterbacks in the NFL. The 17 games, the thing that you hope that is taken care of is just player health. We know that the NFL is a grind. It does have some potentially negative health repercussions for the players. If they manage that, I think it will be fantastic for fans. It should be a lot of fun for fantasy owners. I think for zero running back owners, you have that one extra week to potentially let your team grow, develop, and just become that juggernaut that's unstoppable as you go down the stretch. Also, hopefully we'll avoid some of these situations where, depending on your format. You know, there are a lot of cool different types of things that leagues can do if they start the playoffs early. But one of the pitfalls with starting the playoffs early that we've seen the last couple of years is that if the NFL is on a bye in week 12 and you're playing your quarterfinals or what have you, and you have some of your key players on the bye during the playoffs, you know, that definitely is not what anybody's looking forward to. So we'll see how this all pans out. You know, it may be a situation where some of those problems are not quite solved, but I think an extra game for the fans, you know, we try and focus on that as opposed to extra dollars for the owners.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see. It's one of those things that might take us a couple of seasons to get adjusted to, you know, in terms of the record books and how things will show. But let's see how it plays out. We'll have a lot of discussion on that, I'm sure, as the season draws closer. On today's show, though, we're going to look at Dynasty startup that we talked about last week, where we're going to go from rounds 4 through 9 on today's show. And I just do want to mention, as we start off the show, we mentioned last week we're closing in on episode 200 of RotoViz Overtime. We will be running a contest for that. So I guess if you want to have a sneak peek at getting in, we haven't decided on the actual prize yet, but we are going to be looking for those 5-star reviews on your favorite podcast app. So get ahead of the crew. Any podcast reviews going in from this point forward when the show comes out will be included in that upcoming draw. So don't miss out and get involved early and get set up there. But Sean, when we look at the draft, it's been a real nice start. If we want to have a recap of where we got to last week, we had Trevor Lawrence, CD Lamb, we had Travis Etienne, T. Higgins, and Brandon Ayuk. So things were looking very, very nice after those opening 4 rounds. So I guess we'll let you take the floor. We get to round 5 and the thought process, and of course the pick that was made at that point.
Yeah, so we were able to get that extra early pick by trading back out of the first round, still able to pick up Trevor Lawrence at the beginning of the second round, and then move up again to have that 5th round pick up into round 4. The great thing here, and it does take some picks to do over time, but we were able to move up, and by the end of the 9th round, we had 13 players. And we'll talk a little bit about those trades, and we'll talk a little bit about why we want to construct our team in that way. But let's focus here on the players first. Everybody wants to know who you're picking, why you're picking in that particular range. Did you get a bargain? Did you make a mistake? And so we get there with the 5th pick in round 5. And one of the things that Sam and I were really looking at, and we talked about this in our Dynasty Draft Off series, is that when you get into a format that has fewer starters, that tight end represents a higher percentage of the overall starters and can really be a hammer type player. Once you get down to 10 skill players in the starting lineup, the effect isn't quite as large. We still want to have that tight end stud as opposed to be stuck, you know, every week trying to figure out how are we going to get any points at the tight end position. And this is an interesting season because we do know that those tight ends are being valued very early in redraft leagues, in best ball leagues. But there's also this sort of difficult decision that fantasy owners are having to make in Dynasty because those tight ends are a little bit older, right? So George Kittle goes in the 1st round of this draft. Travis Kelce falls almost to the end of round 3. Kyle Pitts, who's expected to go in the first 10 picks of the reality draft, really the next superstar tight end, he went very, very early there in round 3. In round 4, we have Darren Waller, Mark Andrews, and TJ Hockenson all come off the board. We liked a lot of those guys, especially Hockenson and Andrews, due to the youth. But I like our pick here in round 5 as potentially having all of that upside and more. And so we landed on Noah Fant. And the situation here really comes down to this Denver Broncos offense and what they're able to do at the quarterback position. I think Fant was a little bit more intriguing a couple weeks ago when it looked like they would probably be one of the 2 main teams in on Deshaun Watson. Now Watson, with all of the problems there, that path is looking, you know, much more problematic. But Fant's still a guy who, despite the very poor quarterback play, has started out his career in a way that leads us to believe that he's going to still be a very, very good player and probably a high ceiling player. When you look at ADP, whether it's best ball or dynasty, you see Fant come off the board, you know, a 0.5 round to a round after Hockenson. And I think that that's probably justified. Have a lot of shares of Hockenson, continue to try to get more. But if you look at the two seasons in the books for Hockenson and Fant, when you pull up the NFL Weekly Explorer and see that they're very, very similar, right? Hockenson, 5.7 targets per game, Fant 5.2. Hockenson, 3.5 receptions, Fant 3.3. Yardage is almost identical at 3.89 to 3.98. Actually, a tiny little lead for Fant there. Fant is averaging more yards per target. They had the exact same target shares at 16%. It's kind of interesting because Hockenson is being targeted slightly deeper down the field, but Fant getting a better conversion of air yards to receiving yards, and it's also been better after the catch. Both of those guys, impressive for tight ends. And that kind of brings us back then to Fant with the really, really high upside that I think is camouflaged a little bit by this Denver passing attack. When you look at these numbers, a good start to Fant's career, but you can still kind of forget the fact that this is a guy with a 4.5 40, a 6.8 3 cone, a 39.5 inch vertical. When we're talking about numbers that almost any wide receiver would be ecstatic to have, and you know, you've got it in the big body to Fant, this is a guy who, if Denver can get their passing game going, could be an absolute star, could be one of those guys who, like a George Kittle, is drafted in the first round next year. Now, you know, how the Broncos are going to pull that off now that Watson is probably not much of an option, it's going to be a longer process for them. But I think that when you look at Fant, his age, his production, his athleticism, I think that he should probably be going a round and a half earlier.
Allow me a moment to tell you about our partners over at Blue Wire Pods, and they have opened up an opportunity to distribute your own podcast through Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, you'll get your show pushed straight to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all the other listening platforms. And the best part is you get all of this for just $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So if you're ready to jump straight into the podcasting game and have your voice heard, get ready with Blue Wire Hustle. Acceptance to the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. You can also check out more information in the description box for this episode to find out more. That is bwhustle.com/join.
What's up, listeners? This is Curtis Patrick. I just wanted to stop by and say thank you for supporting RotoViz Radio. You are the absolute best audience in the business, and I know it. As a special thank you, I'm offering 10% off your next RotoViz subscription. Just use code 2020RVRadio at checkout. That's right. Go to rotoviz.com, click subscribe, and enter code 2020RVRadio at checkout for 10% off. You can even extend your subscription. Oh, and one more thing. If you haven't ever done it, please rate and review the podcast you're listening to right now on Apple Podcasts. It's really easy. It only takes like 10, 15 seconds. Just do it. We'd love to hear your feedback. Now, back to the show.
So, Sean, Fant's certainly an interesting pick there. And you mentioned, you know, there's just the quarterback is the main concern, I guess, in Denver. We'll see how it shakes out. But I do like a lot of the pass-catching pieces up in Denver. You know, we were very much aboard the Sutton bandwagon this time last year. And also, obviously, with Jerry Jeudy there as well. So, interesting options. We just need the quarterback now to come and fill. But I think when we look back to when they were both drafted, very, very, you know, high draft picks for Hockenson and Fant. And I think when we look through the comparisons, a lot of similarities, and we're seeing, you know, Hockenson go a couple of spots higher in terms of rankings at tight end. The other thing of interest is, you know, we've talked a few times about the Lions losing, you know, their quarterback and Matthew Stafford. We'll see what happens with Jared Goff, but how that affects Hockenson, you know, might not be being fully taken into consideration with his current draft pedigree, I guess. But moving on to the next round, we get into some younger players to get that base of youth in the team. Going back to wide receiver, there's a lot of interesting picks in this range. It starts to become quite kind of veteran heavy around this range in terms of it's either veterans are those kind of mid-range rookies that we're trying to pick up on.
It does. And one of the things that we want to do, and we've done so far with the Lamb, Higgins, and Ayuk picks, is to get this young wide receiver base. And I like to start out with those second-year guys who have already gotten off to huge starts, because we know that they tend to have excellent careers. You can look at that in a variety of different ways. Blair Andrews has done that in The Wrong Read. I have an article that comes out every year talking about second-year wide receiver breakouts and rookie breakouts. Those two groups, if you break out as a rookie or break out as a second-year player, then you go on to, on average, a much stronger career than the rest of the guys. So you can lay down that foundation and play these guys for 4 or 5 years and then trade them at that point. You get all the production, you trade them at peak value, and you build this juggernaut that, again, accomplishes what we're looking for, which is that perpetual championship window. We get into round 6, and I was excited here because I expected our target to have gone earlier, and that was Devontae Smith. Now, round 5, to give a little context, the wide receivers who came off the board, Terry McLaurin, Chris Godwin, Michael Thomas, Allen Robinson. I like all of those except for perhaps Allen Robinson, who I think maybe is past the range that you really want. It was interesting to see Michael Thomas and Allen Robinson go at such similar areas. Thomas, even with the horrible season last year, seems to be the value in that range if you want a veteran type of player. Now, with the 8th pick in the 6th round, we were able to get Smith, and he's a little bit of a controversial choice despite the insane production that he's had. We know that he's smaller, we know that he's an older fourth-year player, and we've been through on the show with the listeners just how gigantic the gaps are in terms of players who declare early and players who declare after 4 years when you look at their fantasy production relative to draft slot, right? And that's really what we're often looking at, is how can we outperform draft slot and definitely not select players who are going to underperform draft slot. The interesting thing with Smith is he's probably going to go in those first 10 picks. So even if he does underperform that slot, you might still end up with very good production. I think that Smith is an interesting case because his final production is just so insane. And one of the ways that we can go and look at this is to take Travis May's research. He's done the adjusted production index for RotoViz for the last couple of years, a metric that he came up with, which really combines the insights from market share numbers with the insights from yards per team attempt and touchdowns per team attempt. Those tend to be similar for prospects, but they do have some different angles, some different nuance that they can bring in. When you have both of them, you know you're not missing a portion of it because of that particular team's context. And that's one of the reasons why I really love this. Those numbers right now are in the RotoViz draft guide. They'll be coming out on the site sometime in the near future. But we're going to go a little bit under the hood today and explain why we made this pick, even with the red flags for Smith. And that's because, you know, anybody who's followed along, or even if you just watched the college football semifinals and finals and saw this guy who's capable of putting up 200 yards in the first half against an elite defense, like, okay, this seems like something special, even within the context of these Alabama video game offenses. And that really jumps out when we look at these API numbers. Smith came out with a 99th percentile score. To put that in a little bit of context, Elijah Moore, one of the guys that we love, has a great advanced numbers, 93rd percentile. Rashad Bateman, a number one of our favorites, 90th percentile. Tylan Wallace, someone who flying a little bit below the radar, has that same red flag of having stayed for 4 years that Smith had, but 89th percentile. Wallace's numbers are pretty insane. So to be in a situation where Smith is that far ahead of him is pretty crazy. Ja'Marr Chase expected to be the first wide receiver off the board, potentially in the first 5 picks, almost certainly in the first 10 picks, 83rd percentile. And then Terrace Marshall, an LSU breakout from this year, who expected to go sort of toward the end of the first round, an 81st percentile. So even in this loaded draft, and even with the depth that we're expected to see in that first, second round range at the position, Smith stands out as something special. To me, he seems like a slightly better version of Jerry Jeudy. One of the things that Travis points out in his analysis and that we've talked about a lot is that, yes, Smith stayed for 4 years, but he was also better a year ago than Jeudy and Henry Ruggs, two guys who went in the first round. Now, both of them disappointed a little bit, but you kind of dig into Judy's numbers at least, and you see that the volume was there. And so it's the question of this combination of Drew Lock and then all of those drops. The efficiency wasn't you know, Judy probably heading on to a pretty good career. And he actually was the very next pick by Scott Barrett and Danny Kelly. So they were buying into Judy as well. I think that Smith could be, in many ways, similar to what we get from Calvin Ridley. We know Ridley is on the smaller side, and yet he has this vertical ability. He is the touchdown scorer. You do want to get into that situation where you're paired with a quarterback who can help get the job done for you. Matt Ryan, a very solid quarterback. They play in the dome. That's very helpful. But Smith here looks like a guy who, even though he's going to come into the NFL a little bit older, he's actually older than several of the second-year players that we've drafted for this team, still looks like someone who could come in, have an immediate impact, and then be a big-time player for about a decade.
Yeah, and it's interesting when we look at the players going in that range. You mentioned Judy going next, but you know, in that kind of area, we have Amari Cooper going, we have Waddle going, Mike Evans, you know, Bateman, Kenny Golladay, Cortland Sutton, Chase Claypool, Keenan Allen going just two picks later than Judy. So it's an interesting range where we're seeing these players go off the board. And these rounds, kind of 7 through 9, are quite wide receiver heavy rounds. But as I mentioned, it is basically those rookie second year players mixed in with those kind of veterans getting a little bit older, or players with some question marks around them. So the roster developing very, very nicely at this point. Now, we mentioned previously that Trevor Lawrence was taken as your quarterback number one in that second round. So when we look down now, it's going to be interesting over the next three picks. And I might even pair these guys together just to kind of wrap it up in terms of quarterback strategy. But next up, we get Mac Jones in terms of quarterback, and getting another young rookie quarterback in there, somebody that Dave Cabin's analysis in the draft guide showed up pretty well, pretty consistent at college. It's interesting to see then the age bracket between Mac Jones and one of the next quarterbacks. But we do have next up Derek Carr. Obviously, the question marks around that, but still pretty solid when it comes to year-on-year fantasy numbers. But the next one up is Tom Brady. So we've gone from two rookies to Derek Carr to Tom Brady. So it's going to be interesting to see the different thought process. I would expect that the value was just too much at Brady at that point. But I am intrigued to toss out the question against the Brady pick. And I know I'm getting a couple of picks ahead here, Sean. Quarterback 25 is Tom Brady. Quarterback 26 is Matt Ryan. I'm just interested, I'll let you go through the three guys, but I'm interested just in the thought process between Ryan versus Brady. And I know that's getting into later round quarterback picks, but just intrigued to the process there.
Yeah, so this is where it gets a little bit controversial in terms of how we're going about it. We had, Sam and I had some fun little debates with Scott where he was saying he thought our draft was perfect through Devontae Smith, and then he hated it after that. If you've been in these super flex leagues, then the easiest way to eliminate yourself is just not have enough quarterbacks. If you have two, you're in pretty deep trouble. If you have one, you're going to be non-competitive. And I'm in a bunch of the kitchen sink leagues that Ryan McDowell runs. They're a ton of fun. And they, and with the auction element and with all of the trading, with sort of the other elements that he has in there, with franchise tags, with restricted free agency, with contracts, all of those types of things, you have a variety of ways to land quarterbacks, and yet it's still very, very difficult. And it presses on you constantly the value of having these guys, not only in terms of the production during the season, but what they represent in terms of trade value. And I always get a little bit frustrated when you have that guy in your division who is just trying to hog all the quarterbacks and then wants you to give up like four or five awesome players to get one in return. You know, that's not a style that I want to emulate. At the same time, if you have a quarterback, you're going to be able to trade them for more than what you paid in the draft. As soon as the draft is over and people can't be hitting those, you know, the 27th, 28th, 29th QBs, once that opportunity is gone, then the prices for these guys skyrocket. And so the things that Sam and I were trying to do here was to make sure that we had some youth and to make sure that we had some immediate impact. We've got a lot of young wide receivers. We only have Travis Etienne at running back. Running back could be an issue, although not surprisingly, we're going to be using somewhat of a zero RB approach in terms of loading up as the draft gets deeper. But we want to be competitive this season. And so that means a couple of different things. With Mac Jones, you mentioned Dave's analysis. One of the key metrics in his work for the draft guide and valuing these QBs was max adjusted yards per attempt. Jones actually led this group with 12.79 on the season. That's 2.5 yards above Trevor Lawrence, for example. Now, the overall profile for Jones is thinner than for some of these other guys, but you look at what he did in this final season. You look at how he elevated Smith, how he elevated Waddle during the time that Waddle was healthy. You look at some of the things that his teammates are now saying about him, where they're willing to go on record and say they prefer him to Tua. And you start to get the impression that this guy is going to go earlier than people were thinking a month ago. He had a pro day workout where he showed himself to be big and more athletic than people were expecting. You know, he's not going to be somebody who goes out there and gives you, you know, all of this rushing yardage. He's not going to be somebody who goes out there and impresses with his scrambling, his work in the pocket, but he's big enough and athletic enough to be your prototypical NFL QB. And I think that that in and of itself answers a lot of questions, makes it exciting for people who might be looking at him. And now within the last 48 hours, there has been a ton of rhetoric about potentially the 49ers, you know, he being the guy that they moved up for, that Jones could now go, you know, number 3 overall. He could go in the top 5 picks. Whether or not he does that, I think we're to the point where we can be pretty excited about where he's going to go in the draft and his early career opportunities. And so that ends up being a pretty good value. Then you move to Derek Carr, right? He's got the 3 consecutive 4,000-yard seasons, 30 total touchdowns last year. Derek Carr is not exciting, but especially in Superflex, you sometimes have to have those guys. He was the last clear-cut starter in this age 30-ish range or below. And again, that makes him a value because if you have a guy that you can plug in, and even if he's an 18-point-per-game guy as opposed to a 24-point-per-game guy, that's going to beat your other flex options. And you have that as a backdrop and a backstop against injury, a potential trade option there. And then Tom Brady. The thing with Tom Brady is that when you're beginning this draft the way that we are and the way that we like to do all of these, and again, just talking about this permanent championship window, you know, you're thinking that guy is way too old to fit the overall build. And yet at the same time, we're into this situation where Tom Brady may play for another 2 or 3 years. We look at even some of these running backs being drafted in the first, second round range. You look at a Christian McCaffrey, who, you know, we hope can play for another 5 years. You look at some guys like Alvin Kamara and Dalvin Cook. You know, they're already into this range that is often problematic. Now, could those guys play another 3, 4, 5 years successfully? They could. We've talked about how some of the best fantasy seasons ever, you look at Marshall Faulk, you look at Priest Holmes, some of those seasons came in the late 20s, and so it can be done. But when we're looking at windows here, Brady could be a guy who actually does the same type of thing that one of those first, second round running backs will do. And the reason that we took him instead of Matt Ryan is that even though Matt Ryan is younger, has these elite weapons, you do hear scuttlebutt that perhaps Atlanta will use this draft when they do have a fairly early pick to pick his successor. That starts to get you into this range where, you know, if the team goes south or Ryan has a bad stretch or the rookie, you know, looks like Russell Wilson looked in his rookie training camp, then suddenly there's some danger. And so Tom Brady, obviously the Buccaneers are committed to him. They're going for, trying to defend this title. He's got a couple more years in him. He was a QB1 last year. Now toward the end of that tier, QB11, he was the QB8 over the season's second half. And so even though it's a gross pick, and there's no question that it's a gross pick, it's one that really fits the needs that you have when you're trying to construct this dominant super flex lineup.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting, it's a good breakdown as well, just in terms of like the value of some of the other players going much, much higher up the draft board and how they're going to affect the roster year on year. And then when you have those younger quarterbacks in front of it too, it does make sense to have those veteran presences that you can slot in if you do need to, even without bye weeks coming into effect, but let's say bye weeks come into effect and injuries and so on as well. So interesting pick. Just interesting in some of the quarterbacks going in that range as well. The valuation of some of the quarterbacks can vary dramatically when we get to like round seven versus what we're looking at round three, you know, in terms of overall. The other part, Sean, that's very interesting here, and obviously I have the draft board in front of me to look through, but for the listeners, you did trade out round one, that then ended up having two picks in round two. You've had two picks in round four, and then it's been one pick the rest of the way so far, but we're in round nine, and there's obviously a considerable amount of movement that has been done at this point, because we have four picks in round nine coming up here, Brady being the first one, then we have Jalen Reagor, then Tyler Boyd, and then Wallace as well coming off the board. So a lot of moves been made, but that leaves you with 13 players through nine rounds, kind of building up on those core pieces and those earlier rounds to try and build that foundation. We've talked a lot on the show about Tyler Boyd. I think we can probably have a brief overview of that. We talked a couple of weeks ago as well about Jalen Reagor, but an interesting piece, you know, when you're adding those three guys in to kind of firm up that core of wide receivers, that gives you seven wide receivers through those opening nine rounds.
It does, and it looks kind of funny here on the draft grid, because we actually had four of the first five picks in round nine. Those picks, as you mentioned, Brady, Reagor, Boyd, and then Tylan Wallace. The last pick that we had, we tried to trade down a little bit out of the 905. No one was interested there. We felt like Wallace is a reach, and yet you look at what he's done, and here's someone who went for, you know, over 1450 yards as a sophomore in college, the 12 touchdowns last year, just huge, huge numbers in that prolific Oklahoma State offense, came back and had a 50% Dominator rating in 2019 before the injuries. 50%, right? Comes back a 40% Dominator in the 2020 season. So even though, because of injuries and because of the weird way that this last season went for college football, the numbers don't jump out at you in the same gaudy fashion that 1,458 yard, 17 yards per catch 2018 season does. But Wallace basically just prolific production all the way through, was better at the early pro day than people were expecting, is one of the best contested catch wide receivers in this draft. So what you're hoping is that he doesn't fall too deep in this draft, but he could come out and really be one of these top rookie wide receivers. I think you can make an argument for him as early as the wide receiver three. Probably Bateman and Rondale Moore go ahead of him. I think you can make a strong argument for him at the wide receiver five. But even if he slides a little bit further down the board, then if he ends up in a situation with a decent quarterback, you're looking at someone who could be one of these impact performers right away. We had another couple of guys who were much higher rated on our boards at that point, but we thought perhaps they would fall. We didn't know where Wallace was going to go. A lot of young receivers have already gone in this draft. St. Brown went in the eighth round. Elijah Moore, long gone. And so we knew that if we wanted to make sure that we got him, we would have to jump in there, make that pick. The other person we were considering is still on the board for us now in round 10 as we get close to our pick there. Colin, the interesting thing, and we've gotten some questions about trades in dynasty startups and how we want to go about that. We talked about moving down in the first round and picking up a future second round pick. That pick comes in a way later that is very helpful, because it allows us to have some extra ammunition to keep making moves. What we ended up doing was we traded the picks 13, 14, our 2022 round two pick, and our round 2023 first round pick in order to get the 901, the 902, and pick up two round threes. And then later with Scott, we traded our 2022 first round pick in order to get the 904 and also to move up twice in subsequent rounds, and also got back a round three pick. So one of the things that we've done here is when we move down, try and pick up these picks that people are not valuing to such an extent that they won't ever part with them, right? And you look at Superflex, and one of the things that I like to do there is to go after these second round picks, go after even these third round picks. You think back to last year's draft and some of the players who were available in that range. You had some of the running backs. You certainly had someone like a Chase Claypool. You have a KJ Hamler who could still be interesting if Denver gets it going at all. You have some of the tight ends. You have some of the backup quarterbacks or someone like a Jordan Love. Now, that didn't pan out this season because Aaron Rodgers continued to be fantastic. It looks like the Packers may have missed a little bit on their evaluation there. But look at a Jalen Hurts, right, who's also going in that range. If you can load up with these round three picks in Superflex where the quarterback position makes the whole draft so much deeper, then you have ammunition to take shots at your favorite guys, which softens the blow for some of these trades where you've traded your top guys. Now, you know, what do we need to get back in order to give up future first round picks? The number one thing that we're looking at is where are we in the draft currently? And if you were to take the guy you want in a rookie draft, would he be someone you would expect to go in the first round? And so you look at some of the people that we have here. You look at specifically the pick that we made as a result of this and the Jalen Reagor. He's someone who would have been a borderline first round pick in Superflex, which obviously pushed the guys down a little bit. But Reagor's someone who was our top ranked wide receiver in terms of what the wide receiver prospect lab spit out. Someone who now it looks like really the only receiving target that Philadelphia has. And I was going back through and looking at the article that Dr. Jeff wrote on his prognosis after the labrum injury last year. And the shoulder problem there is something that we would have expected to really hurt his rookie year production, right? So we're looking at trying to get some of these values. We're looking at a Tyler Boyd who, even though he's been in the league for a long time, because he came in very young, it's just 26 years old. And so if you're talking about drafting an Elijah Moore, someone who we have great numbers on, he's got all kinds of advanced stats that look fantastic, but you're really looking for him to be in his sort of 75th to 85th percentile outcome. You're looking at him being a Tyler Boyd, right? And we don't know where he's going to go yet. Whereas Tyler Boyd, you're thinking, okay, Joe Burrow, when Joe Burrow was there last year for Higgins and Boyd, those guys were fantastic. So we feel very good about that young quarterback connection, that star connection at QB. And so we can get a little bit of safety by drafting some of these guys who are still in mid-career situations. And we move up all of that value into our current team. And so, again, to have the 13 picks in the first nine rounds in a 10-starter league, you have such a big advantage in terms of the risk that you have, in terms of the depth that you have, and there are so many more things that can go right, right? So when you're looking at these teams, you're thinking, okay, well, I'm through 10 rounds. The draft is really starting to fall off in the depth, but I do have my starting lineup taken care of. I'll probably be okay. You know, we always look at these teams going into week one, and then you look back at them after week four, and you're like, man, a third of my team is injured. I no longer am competitive. Well, if you have three or four extra starters you've been able to draft in that starter range, you can withstand a lot more. And if things go well for you, then you're picking from your best player. So let's say you have a little bit of a good health run, then instead of having all 10 guys had to hit in terms of just being what you thought they were going to be, now you can pick the 10 guys who hit in terms of what you thought they were going to be for that season. And so that gives us a lot of value. And if we're drafting these young players, then we know that a certain percentage of them are going to perform extremely well, and their draft or their trade capital is going to, their trade value is going to rise. And so suddenly we're in a situation where we get into next year's draft and we can trade, say, a CeeDee Lamb for a first round pick, maybe multiple second round picks in a future year. Again, it is really going to depend in a super flex format on what your needs are. If you have to go for a quarterback, you know, what people are looking at there, you know, is there a Ja'Marr Chase who is someone who is going to be intriguing, even if you have a young star? We're looking at risk with these rookies. One of the things that we want to do that is very tricky, and we've talked about Curtis's awesome article that he published recently, where he says, okay, look, if you can draft a startup before the NFL draft and the rookies are in the draft, then you want to make sure you have a lot of them because they're going to be more expensive later. Their trade value is going to increase. Well, then you get into a draft like the one that we're doing here and the rookies are going very, very early, and you have to make sure that you recalibrate at least to an extent, because if rookies are going already at sort of their 75th percentile outcome, then we want to back off of that just slightly and take some of the young veterans that we can be much more sure about. we talk all the time about uncertainty isn't necessarily bad, right? You hear all the time, analysts will say, well, you know, we can't predict that as well. And that's usually given this negative connotation, but it shouldn't be. One of the reasons why you want to court uncertainty is that the uncertainty with it comes that high-end outcome. When you're looking at a veteran, we know what they're going to be. A Sterling Shepard is not going to jump out and become a wide receiver one for you. But we also want to look at these drafts and understand that, okay, if we've got guys who are already stars and they're going in a range where a rookie would have to have a fantastic outcome just to match them, we want to be willing to pivot off of that. The same thing with a first round pick. If the first round pick and a future first round pick is being valued in such a way that number one, you've got to wait until it gets there. And then number two, it's being valued as if that player has already hit. That's when I'm willing to trade out of those slots, take the veteran, play the veteran, and then trade the veteran. And so when we're talking about veterans, some of these veterans can still be young, right? You know, you have a 23, 24, 25-year-old veteran. They play for a couple of years. You trade back out of them. And that's what we're really looking to do, is make sure we move as much of the overall value of our roster, and our roster includes those future rookie picks, move it into the present, but keep it young so that as it develops 2 or 3 years through time and into the future, those guys are still young enough to trade and get a lot of that value back. But in the interim, your roster of actual players is much deeper, is more resilient. It gives you a lot more options, whether you stay healthy or you get hurt.
Yeah, no, it's really good. And that question coming in from Blake Schultz, and it can be tricky sometimes when the questions are layered when it comes to drafts, because every individual draft is going to be different in terms of the values and how to make those moves. But I think the way you mentioned it there, Sean, covers a lot of different elements. I know the listeners are always looking for trade advice from you and how we make those moves. And if anyone does, make sure that they send in any additional follow-ups. We're happy to add these in as we go through, because this is just prime time for those drafts, for those trades to be made. So any follow-up questions from the listeners, send them in to me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland, or send them to rotovizradio@gmail.com. If you're sending in an email, we'll try and add some of them into some of the upcoming shows. As always, you can get yourself a 10% discount off a one-year Rotoviz subscription over on rotoviz.com by adding the code RVRadio2020 at checkout, or by going to rotoviz.com/podcast for more information. That's going to do it for today's edition of the show. My name's Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. You can send us those questions and thoughts on upcoming shows, as I mentioned, as well, to rotovizradio@gmail.com. You can check out of Sean's great work up on rotoviz.com. So until we're back on Thursday with another podcast, have a good one. Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.